It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Indecision. Overthinking. Second-guessing every choice you make. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Beige on beige on beige. Ugh. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
All right, welcome back, everybody, to another Sports Daily. We are live with you here on KFH. Glad to be here with you. 1240 AM, 97.5 FM. You can reach us at 869-1240. We're glad to be here with you. Max Power producing for us. We are getting ready for the Final Four. This is always the part. You get through that Elite Eight, and then you got to wait, and you got to wait, and you don't get the Thursday game. So we got to wait a couple more days, but that's all right. We'll dig into that maybe a little bit here today. We'll take a look at the Royals, who offensively didn't maybe back up some good pitching from their starting pitching, and in the end, extra innings got them, but we'll dissect what happened with the Royals yesterday. The Shockers land a portal player. They're sort of the first of the teams we're following to make a significant move, so we'll look into that. We've got our K-State insider, Tim Fitzgerald, joining us in a little bit as well in the next hour. Looking forward to hearing the latest on K-State's NIL future. Another week here. You know, we talked to Fitz last week, Tom, and none of us could believe that K-State hadn't any players jump in the portal yet. Well, it's another week later. K-State still hadn't any players jump in the portal, at least that I've heard of. So we'll talk to Fitz about that, get the latest there on what they're looking at and what they're doing. It's good Thursday. How are you?
I'm not good. I'm going to be honest with you. Not good this morning at all. I'm tired. I'm worn out. I stayed up last night to watch my Braves play the Dodgers in the finale of their three-game set. Braves were up 5-0 in like the second inning. Shohei Ohtani hits a walk-off homer for the Dodgers to win 6-5 in the bottom of the ninth. Dodgers go to 8-0. Braves go to 0-7. Why did I stay up for that crap? Why did I do that?
You should just give up now.
I'm done with them. I'm done with this season.
But you can't. Now, listen. If you make that proclamation, if they play their way back into contention, you got to stay out. Like, you got to still be done.
I don't know. They trotted out a lineup last night that, you know, looked like, I don't know, that, you know, a double A team, the Wind Surge, could probably beat that lineup. So my faith is gone. You know, they started off on the road for the season on the West Coast. That's always tough, taking on the Padres and the Dodgers. I get it. But they return back home 0-7, their home opener. They'll be 0-7 when they play in front of their fans in Atlanta against the Marlins. You could see it coming a mile away. You know, the bullpen blew it. Ultimately, the Dodgers tied the game. And then as soon as I realized that Ohtani was coming up in the bottom of the ninth, I'm like, here we go. This is done. This is awful.
Inevitable. I don't know why the Wind Surge are catching strays.
I think the Wind Surge could beat them. I mean, I think any minor league team could probably beat the garbage lineup that the Braves are playing right now.
By the way, start their season Friday. They start tomorrow, home opener Tuesday. I don't know what to tell you other than, like, these kinds of proclamations you make now mean you can't get back on board later. Like, if you're going to draw that line in the sand and, you know, say things like it's over, they're done after a week of baseball.
They're 0-7.
Get back in.
They're 0-7.
You can't come back if you're gonna go that hard. Like, you don't get to come back if they go 7-7.
I mean, look, they've been my team for my entire life.
Yeah,
I can come back if I want to come back.
Yeah,
but as of right now, I'm not there. I'm done.
It's a week. It's a week playing maybe the two best teams in baseball. Like, it's okay. It's all right.
They probably? I mean, this was supposed to be a playoff team, right? A contender themselves. Don't you think they probably could have scraped across one win out of the seven games they played?
Sure. Sure. My point in baseball, and I have to tell myself this all the time, is teams go on seven-game losing streaks. Really good teams go on seven-game losing streaks frequently. Like, they just, it's a bad set of circumstances. They are very banged up. They had a brutal way to open the schedule, and they're not going to go 0-162 this year.
I'm looking at you, Jerks, and Profar. I blame you for all of this.
Yeah.
Playing four games, and then you get suspended for PED use. What are you doing? Like, what are you doing? I'm more mad at myself for staying up late to watch the end of the game. I'm like, hey, they finally have a lead. Like, they're going to win a game. They're going to get one out of the Dodgers. And I stayed up for it, and then Ohtani crushed my soul.
Crushes a lot of souls. Crushes a lot of souls there. Shohei Ohtani does. He's pretty incredible. That happened late last night, if you didn't stay up. Royals played day baseball. We'll get into the Royals. Did you see the Chris Beard story as we browse the headlines?
No, I must have missed that.
So Chris Beard is going to stay at Ole Miss, got a raise and an NIL bump because he was flirting with Texas A&M.
Oh, okay.
And that's really interesting for a lot of reasons. I think Chris Beard's an awesome coach, but come on, man. Like, he did Tech so dirty, and then he gets booted from Tech. I want to say the only reason he's flirting with Texas A&M is spite, and I can almost appreciate that because that A&M-Texas rivalry runs deep, and I think he's a Texas guy. So that would have been the ultimate spite move. But you just got to Ole Miss and made the Elite Eight. You landed back in the SEC. Like, can we stop with the coach stuff sometimes? Like, it drives me nuts. What are we doing? Chris Beard going to leave Ole Miss? Like, come on. He got his raise and he got an NIL bump. They're expected to have top five SEC money. You better stay at Ole Miss forever and be very grateful you got the chance to be there. Like, I get so sick of this sometimes. And they can do whatever they want. And these schools can do whatever they want.
Yeah,
it
I think
been the ultimate spite move.
It would have. I think he's got the opportunity, though, you know, to be a legendary coach at Ole Miss. I mean, that's not a traditional basketball powerhouse. But if he can stay there for a long period of time, and I know that's against what Chris Beard has always done in his career. He bounces around all over the place. But if he can stay there, I mean, they'll build a statue for him, right? Like, they'll name the building after him at that point, just because they haven't had consistent, sustained success at that program forever, and he can be the guy to do that. He just has to stay there for more than a couple of years. And I think that considering he turned down A&M, at least that leads me to believe that he's in a different stage in his career, you know, where he actually wants to stick around someplace.
I think so. Remember, he coached at Fort Scott. He's been around for a long time. it's interesting because you think about loyalties, and he would, Texas was his alma mater. So, you know, going from Tech after 5 years to Texas for a few, like, I got it. It was a stab in the back, but it's like, that's his alma mater, right? He bounced around a lot before that. And I don't, it's all an interesting set of circumstances. The reason that he was gone from Texas wasn't necessarily by choice. He's very, very good at what he does. But you even as spite filled as much as you could twist the knife on Texas, who just fired their coach, as you could be, like, Ole Miss welcome you with open arms. It's the SEC. They just made their commitment. Like, you better, if it's not Texas, your alma mater now, it better not be anywhere. I don't care if Duke comes open. Like, you better stay at Ole Miss. The circumstances that put you there, put you there. Now stick it out.
You know, I think that also on top of it, too, it's a money thing. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, A&M has such deep pockets. Like, they can go and pay whoever they want. And so if they're throwing a bunch of money at Chris Beard, and it sounds like they probably were going to, or at least interested in doing that, and he turns that down, Ole Miss is able to show their commitment to basketball. I think that speaks huge about the future of what Ole Miss basketball wants to be.
I like Chris Beard, by the way. I think he's a great coach. I'm not talking about personally. I don't care personally. That situation was weird. I'm talking about as a coach, though. He's as good at what he does as anybody. All right, we'll come back. More Sports Day. Let's talk a little Royals when we return.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
Nerds! Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Are target date funds a smart or lazy way to invest? Should you pay off debt or invest extra cash? Can you deduct your dog as a home security system on your taxes? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing strategies, tax planning, and smart ways to build wealth and navigate big financial decisions. Work smarter, not harder, on your finances this year. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Visit DollarShaveClub.com and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more.
Hey everyone, quick shout out to Whole Foods Market. You know I'm all about eating fresh and finding quality ingredients, and that's exactly what Whole Foods delivers. Whether you're grabbing organic produce, high quality meats, or just a quick healthy snack, they've got you covered. Plus, they're all about sustainability and supporting local farmers, which I love. Next time you're grocery shopping, check them out. You'll taste the difference. Spring is the perfect time to refresh your table, and Whole Foods Market has everything you need. Hosting brunch? Picture this. Flaky, buttery quiche, crispy bacon, fresh berries, and of course, cold-pressed orange juice to brighten up your morning. And if you're in the mood for something fizzy, check out their seasonal Italian sodas. Berry Blend and Orange Hibiscus are total must-tries. So whether you're planning a casual get-together or a full-on feast, Whole Foods Market has you covered. Make Whole Foods Market your destination for all spring gatherings.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Time to get back to the sports talk.
All right, let's do this thing. Go!
Sports Daily is on KFH.
All right, welcome back in to Sports Daily. You want to win some HTO? You can do that right now. Free cup of iced tea on us is available to you by just texting the keyword tea to 20357. That'll get you a free iced tea, more than 26 flavors, East Wichita, West Wichita, or Derby. And don't forget to try while you're there. These don't count for the coupon, but you got to try them anyway. There's new energy refreshers, three new flavors. Try those out. They're very, very tasty if you're needing an extra jolt while you're in. But the keyword to win the tea is tea, and you just got to text it to 20357. Message and data rates apply. Good luck, everybody. Welcome back into Sports Daily. We're talking a little baseball here to start things off. Let me start with this before we dig into the Royals specifically. We've done this long enough now. Tommy, I think I'm ready to be done with the ghost runner and extra innings. I didn't mind the idea of it when it was announced, because I'm always, especially for baseball, a proponent of like, let's get people through these games a little quicker. I think doing the things that they've done to make games go faster is one of the great things the sport has ever done as far as popularity, viewership, all these things. The ghost runner thing, though, drives me nuts. It does alter how a game should end. Like, I kind of throw my hands up in the air when you get to extra innings, because what is it changes everything. Like, what a reliever comes in, they're not allowed to go into a clean inning. Like, they didn't earn that in any way. Like, I think I'm ready to be done with the ghost runner. And I think that we have sped the game up enough that in the occurrence of extra innings, we'll be okay if they just play them out regularly.
Yeah, until we get to a game that runs 18 innings, because nobody's getting any kind of runs across.
A game with a ghost runner could run 18.
It could, you know? But I think the odds of that are much, much, much lower when you start every half inning with a runner on second base.
But the odds of extra innings in general are what? 5%, 10%? Like, they're not, they don't.
I mean, I really like the ghost runner, and I'm a fan of it. I have no desire to get rid of it, because I think it makes every extra inning that much more on the edge of your seat. It makes it that much more impactful. You don't get the benefit of the doubt to have, you know, a clean inning and nobody on base and all of that. It makes it that much more important to have a really solid bullpen and really good relievers who can pitch when you've got a runner in scoring position. It changes the way that you approach hitters. I like the fact that they start on second, because there's so much strategy involved in it. You can't get a standard double play. You know, you have to do something different with that. You can't, I mean, honestly, like, you could have two sacrifice flies. So you've got to prepare for that if you're the pitcher and make sure that you're, you know, pitching to ground ball as opposed to pitching for fly balls. Like, there's so much strategy involved when you start the inning with a runner on second base. I'm actually a really big fan of it.
Yeah, I just don't like that, and we'll take yesterday's game, for instance, that Milwaukee gets into a position that they didn't earn to win the game on a squeeze bunt. You know what I mean? Like, they don't even have that opportunity if it's not for the ghost runner. Now, I'm not saying I don't love the squeeze bunt. I love the squeeze bunt. I'm saying they didn't earn that opportunity to be able to win that way. And what it does is it takes perhaps a really strong pitching performance and it throws it in the trash can. Your pitcher comes in that situation, they give up a ground ball, the other team can squeeze bunt and win the game. Like, that pitcher didn't do anything to deserve that. He didn't pitch poorly to take the loss that way. And I think that's tough.
Like, plan for it. Look, I'm not feeling like sorry for the Royals.
The only productive out then is an infield fly or a strikeout. Right? A ground ball out isn't productive anymore. Now you've got a runner on third with less than two outs.
I think you have to, you can qualify that a little bit, because there are some ground balls that would be productive. Depends on where the ground ball is hit. Like, if it's a ground ball that's not going to advance the runner, then that's a productive out.
So only ground balls to the left side are unproductive. But that's what I'm saying. Like, and again, it's not like I'm not screaming it from the rooftops and like, this has to change.
I promise you that if the roles were reversed and it was the Royals that were able to get it done and make it happen on that, we wouldn't be having this conversation right now.
No, it's not. It's not that. It's I was annoyed when Estevez was able to come in like that, and the Royals got the run in the other half of that first inning that they played. It's not that it's the Royals at all. It's just in general. It's honestly, it's what it is to me is sympathy for the pitchers that have to come into that situation. That's what it is. Like, bullpens are fickle. Bullpen guys are, it's such a mental game in the bullpen sometimes. And sometimes I think these guys have to take L's that they didn't deserve or earn. And I think that can have longer reaching implications. And I think that sucks. Even in, like, you have to alter the way you would approach a game in a normal circumstance. And while I don't hate that entirely, it's forced. The other team didn't earn that. So that's where for me, like,
what do you mean didn't earn that? Like, you have to, like, they won on a squeeze bunt. You have to execute
the ghost runner. They didn't earn the ghost runner. The ghost runner didn't do anything to end up at second base with nobody out. So then the pitcher has to inherit a mess that they didn't earn. That's the part to me that's like,
how many times does a reliever come into a game and inherit a mess that they didn't earn?
But the pitcher before him screwed up to get there, right? Nobody screwed up.
Yeah, that doesn't change the circumstance for the reliever. They're coming in, they're inheriting a mess regardless of who caused it or if anybody caused. Like the reliever, like, that's kind of what they do. They go in and clean up messes. That's their job.
Yeah, and look, I'm not screaming it from the rooftops, because you can easily equate it to the way college football does overtime.
Totally.
Right? They didn't earn starting the ball at the 20-yard line, so you're forcing the defense into a bad situation. So again, like, I'm okay. It's not like a huge thing. As I'm watching it, though, like, just like a quiet observation, I've watched it several times this year, I'm like, yeah, I think I'm ready to be done with the ghost runner. Again, not going to break my heart if we always have it. It's no big deal. It just, as I'm watching it, I was like, yeah, that's annoying that's the way it played out. And the home team has a very clear advantage in it, which is also probably okay. But the Royals fall in extra innings.
I don't think the home team has a clear advantage on it. I mean,
they know what they need.
You're right, but that's the same way in college football. The second team always knows what they need.
Right.
And like, we're not screaming about how bad the college football overtime setup is.
Some
like,
people are. I'm not. I'm okay with it. But some people do. I mean, people scream about overtime one way or the other. And again, I'm not screaming about this. I'm trying to call it silently observing, because as I'm watching it, just like as a side note, I'm like, I don't think I like this as much.
I would have an issue if only one team got the ghost runner. Like, if the home team got the ghost, like, you know, that's like that's like NFL over, like, sudden death. Like, and we talked about it yesterday. I mean, there's a situation where one team never touches the ball in the overtime period. Like, that's a problem. I don't feel like the ghost runner situation is a problem at all. I really like it.
Yeah, no, I don't think it's unfair. That's not what I'm saying at all. I'm just saying I don't think I like it as much as I thought it would. I think that I would just like a clean inning more. So we've got the Royals. They fall there. Let's dig into the game a little bit, because I think once you get to those extras, it's kind of hard to like take anything big picture. The offense for Kansas City has been inconsistent so far this year. It was not a particularly good series for the offense, I didn't think. That, you know, they had, of course, the huge opening game and then nothing, and then two runs in 11 innings, and one of those runs came with a ghost runner. Like, hey, bats need to pick it up a little bit. Not worried at all about it yet. The pitching, though, I thought there were a lot of positives. Cole Reagans was his more electric self, 10 strikeouts in 5 innings. Still a little noisy. Noisier than we'd like to see with Reagans. It's inflating his pitch count, but 10 strikeouts in 5 innings, you can't ignore that. And then Tommy, the bullpen, you know, before you got to ghost runner, Angel Zerpa was really bad. Ursig bailed him out because Ursig is incredible, but you had 5 guys go and they only allowed 1 hit. So I thought that was a really nice, as we've talked about, like, how do they get, if you got to bring them in, like, from the 5th, the 6th, how do they get to the 7th inning? Last night, it was a little unique in the way they did it. They brought Harvey in very early in the game. They brought him in to pitch the 6th. They almost tried to flip he and Zerpa's role. Zerpa comes in and immediately creates a mess that Ursig bails him out of. Schreiber did have a walk, but he did strike two guys out, which is a great sign, probably. And then Daniel Lynch continues to be clean. I thought they should have brought Daniel Lynch back out in extras instead of Estevez, but it was a save situation. So I get it. You bring your closer in, it's fine. But the way Lynch is going, I was like, just leave Lynch. Like, let him just keep going. But, it, you know, a good performance out of the bullpen yesterday, which I think you feel pretty good about.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, you can definitely tell which relievers are rising to the top. You know, that cream rises to the crop. And it's, you know, definitely been Daniel Lynch and Lucas Ursig, you know, for sure, that have raised their hand. And I don't think we're overly surprised by that, you know, at all, especially, you know, yesterday. I'm starting to get to a point, and it took me a little bit longer to get there. It took about six games for me to say, yeah, Zerpa is struggling. Like, I don't know if you go away from him, but Matt Quatrero has leaned on him pretty heavily. I mean, it's really been Lynch and Zerpa through the first six games. We haven't seen as much from Schreiber and from Stratton and from Long. It's been primarily Zerpa and Lynch, and Lynch has been great. Zerpa has not been great. And so, you know, I don't know if the strategy should change at all from Quatrero. I get that you really want to use him as your first arm out of the pen around that sixth inning mark, because we've seen it happen multiple times already, but he hasn't been able to execute in that position. Maybe there's a better spot for him. Maybe there's a more low leverage situation that you could utilize him in, but at least the way that they've done it so far and the way they've deployed him out of the pen as kind of that first arm out for the most part, that hasn't really worked.
No, and the if you look at the way it's all played out this year, Zerpa has thrown really the same amount. Like, so the group is the group, right? Sam Long has been used the most, and he also has not been very good. But you've had, so Long has appeared in four games. What have the Royals played? Six?
Yeah.
So four out of six. Ursig has appeared in half. Lynch has appeared in half. Harvey has appeared in half. Estevez has appeared in half. Schreiber has appeared in half, and Zerpa has appeared in half, because the starters, nobody's giving you outside of Bubich more than five innings. So they need all of these guys clearly, because they're all pitching all the time. And by the way, I just listed seven guys. You're not getting much deeper than that in the bullpen. The only other guy that's seen any action is Chris Stratton, and he got shelled. So I don't guess you can just not use Zerpa, which is a problem. I mean, maybe you try to use Stratton. I don't know how you can do that any better. The answer is that your starters, right, are getting you one inning deeper into the game. That's the answer, is that your start. Because if your starters give you six innings, now you've got six guys basically that you can use for 7, 8, 9, which should be enough. But the problem is these starters aren't getting, so right now they're kind of stuck with Zerpa. But and he deserves a long leash. I get it. He was very valuable for them last year, and I'm okay with
that. And he had a great spring training. He had a wonderful spring training. One of their best arms out of the pen. It just right now, through the first six games, has not translated.
I think the answer is to flip his role with Schreiber. I think that's the answer. So now if you get five, your ideal scenario is Schreiber, Harvey, Ursig, Estevez instead of Zerpa. And let's just see how that goes. Schreiber, when he came back from injury, was effective last year. So it's worth a shot until Zerpa can get it figured out. And in the meantime, let Zerpa and let Stratton be your mop up dudes when you have a big lead or you're trailing big, to just try and get right a little bit. I mean, we're a week into this now, three appearances for Zerpa, and he's looked like pretty unusable to me. Like, he just looked like he comes in and you're like, they're about to start knocking him around, and he has to be able to work through that. But right now with a lead, it's really hard to use him. I mean, I get it, right? Like, I wouldn't do it if I was Quatraro. Right.
And now, I think you and I actually probably differ on what the solution should be for the Royals, because I know you just mentioned that really an ideal circumstance would be that you can ask your starter to go another inning. I'm not sure that that's realistic. I mean, because Quatraro has done that in a couple of games, opening day with Reagans, the game with Lorenzen. And they've gone out into the sixth inning, and neither one of those guys were able to deliver in that sixth inning. So I'm not sure that that's realistic to be able to say, well, the best case scenario is that the starter can go another inning. I think you have to have another arm out of the pit. If it's not Zerpa, you've got to have somebody else who you can slot in there to be reliable and just get you through the sixth.
I don't think that now, big picture, the Royals definitely don't want their starters only throwing five innings. So it's how quickly can they get comfortable and in the groove enough to be consistently giving you six. We should be having conversations about whether they can get into the seventh, not the sixth. Five innings for all your starters is not going to be enough. Like that's not good enough in the short term while they get there. Yeah, I think, I think we had this discussion the other day and probably we both feel the same way we did then, which is different. I would much rather, let's take last night, for instance, I would have much rather seen Reagan. Now they used Harvey, so it's not a perfect example, right? But I would much rather see Reagan's come out in the sixth and try than Zerpa come out in the sixth clean. Right now, that, you know, caveat. So that, and I still think that I don't trust Zerpa at all at the moment, like even a little bit. I think he's going to get knocked around every time he comes out. Like he's got to have a chance and clean up in no risk innings to get this thing figured out.
Yeah. I think for me, the biggest issue, I mean, of course we can talk about Zerpa and we could talk about the bullpen and all of that. They've got to get more consistent offensively. That has kind of reared its ugly head during the Milwaukee series, especially. I mean, yesterday, far too many strikeouts. Stranding runners on base in scoring position is not going to get it done. I mean, they had nine runners they left stranded in the game, and five of them were in scoring position, and they couldn't get those guys across. Like, that's an issue. And honestly,
no, for sure.
Honestly, outside of Jonathan India and Michael Garcia, the rest of the offense, they've shown flashes, but not consistently. India and Garcia have been the most consistent bats in the lineup, and that's nice. I mean, you needed to have a consistent leadoff guy in Jonathan India for sure, but we need to see more consistency from the heart of the lineup for sure.
The offense has not hit its stride.
No.
Most offenses outside of the Yankees and Dodgers this year have not hit their strides because it's cold still. Like, you don't. Like the weather turns, and I don't know if they had the roof closed or open in Milwaukee yesterday. I'm not sure.
I think they did the entire series. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. So it's usually hitters are behind pitchers this time of year. Again, I think for me, like I do just sort of trust Whit Pasquantino and Perez. And so then when I see Jonathan India be off to the incredible start that he's on and also see Michael Garcia, like if Michael Garcia could ever figure out how to not go into his wretched slumps, he would be very good. And so now if you're going to tell me he has a chance to also play the outfield and can basically just find playing time every day somewhere, I think the upside for this offense, Tommy, might be even better than we thought. I really do. Like we thought that adding India could, like, okay, that could help unlock a little bit. Man, I think it's even higher than we thought because they've done, like, they basically haven't had anything yet out of their big bats, and that's coming. Tommy, the Shocker's making a little noise here in the portal, and they get a guy that we both kind of like, a good guy that, you know, was a great defensive player for East Tennessee State. Is it the Shockers saw East Tennessee State this year? Maybe some connection to, I don't know, like Steve Forbes, who used to coach at East Tennessee State. Who knows if this guy's even there, but he's a good defensive player. He was what, first team all defense in that league. So his name is Caron Boyd. I believe it's pronounced Caron. I'm not 100% sure on that. I don't think it's like your big splash. This is, you know, and I think some people are being way too skeptical. Like, oh, what, like this guy's averaging 8-7. No. Like when you hear what he did there, it's a piece that makes some sense. Like we know Wichita State's got to start through defense. So going to get a good defensive player, if not a great defensive player out of the portal, makes a ton of sense. Not only that. Yeah, I thought so. Not only is he first team, he was a SoCon defensive player of the year.
Yeah, he was. I mean, I think that you definitely have to understand like what he brings. And it is that, you know, defensive prowess. And, you know, I think that knowing that, yeah, is it a huge, like, splash type signing for Paul Mills? I mean, not necessarily, but I do think that when you can get somebody who, you know, was the reigning defensive player of the year in your conference, yeah, I mean, I think that that can bring a little bit of intensity defensively to your team. On top of that, he played in Coke Arena this season against the Shockers and put up 16 points. I mean, I know he's averaging, what, 9-8, and that's what he did, but he finished with 16 points and 5 boards when they played inside Coke Arena back in December. So he's familiar with that. He had a good game against the Shockers last year. And, you know, look, like, is it, you know, is it something that we know for sure that he's going to be an impact player for the Shockers? No, not at all. But they needed to get some wins in the portal, and I think this is at least one of them.
One way or the other, he's going to be an impact player.
He may have to be, you know.
Yeah, it's what's the impact. I don't, like, it's not a nothing burger sign. It's a really nice.
I think it's a nice piece.
Like, the second I saw it early in the day, like, TJ Cleland was telling me, he was like, did you, and I didn't see it when it happened. And all he said was, yeah, you know, SoCon Defensive Player of the Year. And I was like, I'm in. Like, I'm in. Because I know the great challenge of the portal for Wichita State has been and will be finding offense, right? It's the challenge for everybody. Everybody, Kansas is looking for shooters. They're not easy to find. That's where when Corey Washington's leaving, you're like, ah, that was offense. You know, that was easy, not easy offense, but it was offense you could sort of put your watch to for the Shockers, probably more than any other player, honestly, as far as consistency goes. Now you got to replace that. Well, again, they found him last year. Where did he come from? Right? St. Peter's. So I think this is the way for Wichita State. And if we look at the success of the players on the roster, Xavier Bell came up from Drexel, right? Corey Washington up from St. Peter's. We've seen some of the JUCO guys over the years come in and be highly successful. There has been a more difficult or at least a longer road, I think, to success for those guys at other programs who aren't getting their opportunity. It took Quincy Ballard a long time coming in from Florida State to be as productive as he was last year, right? Justin Hill did not work out. McGinnis, where did McGinnis come from? I can't even remember now. It's so hard to keep up with players anymore. Bijan Cortez came from Oklahoma. And it took him a long time. I think you're better served if you're Wichita State. And you don't want to generalize this because you don't want to, like, close the door on anybody. But if we are, like, generally speaking, I think the portal gets a little easier when you're taking productive players, players who have already been productive in their careers.
McGinnis came from Lipscomb. He played 2 seasons at Lipscomb.
He came up.
Yeah.
And I think so. And this exercise just tells us there are 1,000 different ways to attack the portal. My eye tells me that the Shockers will be better served going to find guys who, because you're gonna get, like, their recruiting classes have been good, like their high school players have been good. Those are the guys that are, like, if you're gonna find minutes or have to grow into a role, feels like it's gonna be those guys. So you don't have a lot of, if you're gonna play them at all, you might as well get experienced players in. And, you know, Wichita State's not in a position to go do what Memphis is doing, or like Creighton, who, according to Taylor Eldridge, is one of the teams that Corey Washington has been contacted by. Like, teams that I think one of the toughest pills to swallow for Wichita State and for Shocker fans is seeing the Shockers lose players to teams that you feel like Wichita State ought to be in the same standing as. It's not so much when, you know, guys go to Arkansas or Alabama or whatever it is. It's not that you're just like, yeah, what are you going to do? Right. It's when you lose a player to Memphis, or it's when you lose a player to, if it happened, like, to Creighton or to UCF. UCF used to be in the American with the Shockers, or Cincinnati. Like that's where it's like, that shouldn't be happening. And I think that's probably the most difficult of all of it. Like, if you're going to lose your players to Duke, okay, fine. But you can't lose them to those programs where the Shockers ought to be on the same footing.
Well, and I think it just shows you where the program is from a stature perspective right now, yes, you know, compared to some of these other programs. I think that with the Boyd signing, I mean, one thing that I will be interested to see how it plays out is how they utilize him, how they use him. I mean, he's not, at least he hasn't been, a major consistent offensive threat, especially from the perimeter. And East Tennessee,
not a three-point shooter.
East Tennessee utilized him kind of splitting time between the three and the four. You know, he's only 6'5", and he could probably play the four in the SoCon and have success doing that, especially defensively. He was the defensive player of the year. But I wonder how that translates to the American. I wonder if, you know, and Taylor Eldridge does a great job of breaking this stuff down, you know, talking about how he's a little bit undersized to play power forward. And he was able to do it at East Tennessee. Would he be able to do that at Wichita State? I mean, you're giving up
he's
probably
bigger than Corey Washington.
Well, yeah, right. But, you know, you're also dealing with, I think, competition that is a step up from who you were playing.
No, I just mean size
in the SoCon.
We're talking undersized.
Right. So I think it'll be interesting. I mean, he split time between the three and the four last year. Does Paul Mills utilize him more as a three or more as a four? And that's going to, I think, come down to who else is he able to get in the portal and how can he put these pieces of the puzzle together? But honestly, you can't start the puzzle until you have the first piece, and he's at least that first piece.
Right. And he's, again, he's not, and I don't think he will be, nor can he be, like the splash piece. There's a scorer out of South Dakota that a lot of teams are in on that I know the Shockers have been rumored to be in on. That would be, you know, the kind of scorer you have. But that doesn't always translate either. Think about Doug McDaniel and how much time that took, and like all the other that, you know, Rylan Griffin at KU, like, doesn't always translate either, the scorer aspect of it. So If I'm going to have to start from scratch, I'd rather start from scratch with great defensive players. Boyd is bigger than Corey Washington, and Corey Washington handled it fine down there, at least offensively. So I think he'd be okay playing that position, because it's really more about what he can give them defensively at that position than what he can create offensively. But he outweighs Corey Washington by a good 30 pounds, and they're the same height. So he's quite a bit bigger than Washington, and that helps too. I imagine he probably is built kind of like Mate, maybe a little bit shorter than Mate, but, you know, thick. They got to find a center. You know, that's going to be hard to find. The kid out of Hoxie that was up here from UNC Wilmington is visiting. He's visited. That would be probably one of the major wins of the tournament if you could get it, right? If you could get him in to try to replace Ballard, now you're cooking. And he was very Obioha. Harlan Obioha was very happy to be back home in the tournament when he talked with the media. And so I think a lot of people have thought he was going to be a little out of the Shockers league. He's only a junior. He's 7 foot tall, 9-6 for Wilmington. But he's going to get a lot of offers. But if he does want to be closer to home back in Hoxie, the Shockers may have a shot at him. And now it's like, okay, that's a pretty big get, because I don't know who all he is being courted by, but it's going to be, I mean, 7 foot tall and one of their best players. So he's going to get looks in a lot of big places. If the Shockers could, you know, if the Shockers could find a way to land him, that would be meaningful.
I mean,
sure.
He's a great rebounder. You know, he does great in with blocked shots. I mean, obviously he's 7 foot tall.
He's also the size of a left tackle. He's
right,
not just seven.
Right.
Like, he's 7 foot tall and weighs, what's he weigh? Like 300 pounds. Like, he is humongous.
He's also a good scorer, you know, like he shoots pretty efficiently from the field. He's an all-around good player, and you can tell that based on the interest that he's receiving from other schools. We're not talking about programs, and we're just talking about the stature of Wichita State. We're not talking about programs that are kind of around Wichita State's stature. I mean, he's getting courted by teams like Wake Forest, Mississippi State, Rutgers, West Virginia. He's
Cincinnati, Texas.
Like, there are several schools that are pursuing him that are high major schools that can probably, you know, compete pretty competitively, at least with NIL dollars. So it's going to be a matter of what Wichita State can do in that regard. The advantage the Shockers will have, obviously, is the location where Wichita State is compared to being back home.
Well, and there's another advantage I think that they might have when you talk about a player like that, because I don't think like Texas is backing up the Brinks truck for Harlan Obioha, nor are they able to say, you're going to be a big piece in what we do minutes wise, right? Like, I don't think that some of these other teams that he's talking to are going to be able to do that. I think Wichita State has a few advantages here. Geography may be the most important, but opportunity is important. And if Ballard's out the door, they don't have to try very hard to show Obioha his opportunity. It's look at what Quincy Ballard did last year. Like, that's your role. Come take it. Like, you got that role. So the opportunity would be there. And then the other
I love Quincy Ballard. But I think if Obioha fills that role, if he can come into Wichita State and do that job, he could probably do that job better than Quincy Ballard did. I think offensively he could. Ballard brought a ton to the table, and this is not a knock on Quincy Ballard at all. But I think the upside for what Obioha can do in that role, if that's his, and I guarantee now that Ballard is in the portal, that's the pitch to him from Paul Mills, is do that job. It's yours. You own it. I think there are some elements of that role that he could probably do better than Quincy Ballard.
I mean, Ballard's season last year, honestly, if you're talking about true centers, was one of the best for a Shocker we've ever seen. Like,
it's not a knock on Quincy Ballard whatsoever.
I don't want to say Obioha needs to be Quincy Ballard, but the role is for sure there. In 2 years, like, and you know, Paul Mills' offensive prowess or his ability, like, who knows? But the other thing that we got to see with somebody like this is, okay, these other teams are coming. The opportunity is not going to be there as much. We are going to make you a prized NIL guy. And I'm talking dollars and cents now. Like, what is the difference between the Shockers prioritizing a player, right? And I don't want to use Texas as an example, but Cincinnati just kind of wanting a guy because they're pretty good. And I think we'll learn some of that. We're going to come back. We're right up against it. More Sports Daily. Don't go away.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Thanks to Prairie Fire Coffee for keeping us fueled up here on KFH. Thanks to Crestview Country Club for being one of our great sponsors. It is getting into golf season, and Crestview has 36 holes that you can play on. It's one of the great parts of their memberships. You can go out to the North Course where they play the Wichita Open. You can go out to the South Course. There are bits and pieces of both that I really enjoy. And then when you're done playing, you can head into the bar, have a beer, have some food. It's a great way to spend a summer day. They've also got a really nice pool that they're renovating. I can't believe they're renovating the pool. They're upgrading what already is the best pool in town, Tommy. So give them a call. Again, we're working on some really cool things to do with you at Crestview, give you opportunities to get out there, maybe check out the club, the golf, all those things. We appreciate their support here on Sports Daily. We come back in. We've been talking Wichita State in the portal. We can sort of put a bow on that. We got into Harlan Obioha, and it's hard for me, Tommy, to like get into specific players before they come. He's interesting, of course, because he's from Kansas. We just saw him here at the NCAA tournament. He was an incredible high school story out at Hoxie, playing offensive line at the same time. He tantalizes, and he's the kind of player where, as we continue the discussion we were having, where if you're Wichita State, I truly believe that Wichita State will be able to offer him as good an opportunity as any school in the country if he's looking to take up a step. There won't, I mean, you could not walk into a more cherry-picked opportunity for a center than at Wichita State, outside of what Kansas is looking for, potentially, and he's not going to Kansas. So, like, of the range of schools, like, this is opportunity-wise the best one. The question becomes, what about the NIL piece of it, right? Because geography's in Wichita State's favor. But what if, you know, let's use one of the other schools as an example that John Rothstein put it out. And this has been a while since this came out. But, you know, Texas, Cincinnati, some of the other schools. Can Wichita State match the NIL of a non-prioritized, let's call it, player for some of these bigger schools? And that's what makes this all really hard, is because we don't have a good understanding of where Wichita State sits in that world. And that's not the case for every school, right? Like, we know Memphis sits pretty in NIL. They go and get everybody's players every year, right? We know that about them. I don't think we know currently, other than it's better than it was 2 or 3 years ago, where exactly Wichita State sits in that world and how that compares to the peers around them.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's partially about Wichita State. It's partially about how much money they have to work with that we don't know. But then, to your point, we also don't know what a lot of other schools have either. We do know kind of a general idea, you know, with some of the high major programs. Usually that sort of thing comes out when a coach, you know, goes to a new school and part of their package is announced that, you know, the school's made a commitment with X amount of dollars in NIL. I know the Chris Beard situation that we talked about last hour with Ole Miss, like, they committed at a larger level to NIL dollars. So, like, we have a general idea with some programs. But one thing that I would love to see changed in general is transparency and openness with every school. Like, everybody knows what each school has to spend, and that's open, because then, you know, like, there are a lot of people, like myself included, I love looking at, you know, the NFL. We do it all the time with the Chiefs, and we try to play accountant a little bit, you know, and like we're game planning, like, how close are they to the cap, and what moves can they make, and who can they go and get, who's garnering what kind of, you know, money from the market and that sort of thing. We're able to play that game. Whether or not it comes to fruition, who knows? Like, that's not up to us, but at least we have a general understanding of that. We don't have any of that in college basketball or college athletics in general. We can't go through that exercise as fans and speculate what these programs have to spend, for the most part, because it's not transparent. It's not out in the open. We don't know. It's not like you can go through and you can, like, find the budget and find
out
like what each player is making. And I would love to see that changed.
I don't know if it will, because I think it can change on the fly, right? You might have somebody in the crosshairs that you can go to a donor and be like, yo, we got to come up with this XYZ, and they come up with it. So I think that's pretty impossible. I do think we could learn more about a baseline, but honestly, I think you just have to use the evidence that's in front of your face, right? Wichita State continues to lose too many players for me to think that it's where it ultimately needs to be. Getting it there, And I think that's got to be a part of the evaluation. And it's why, like, let's say evaluating the job Kevin Saul's done as the athletic director, it's really hard now, because I would have told you when he was hired, the greatest challenge he faced would be to get NIL where it needs to be competitive. And I think that was,
I mean, when he took the job, I believe that was.
And I think that I think it's significantly better than where it was. Now, if you're looking at it at the successes of the coaches he's hired, that's not as good. Right. And so I think that makes it difficult to evaluate everything, but honestly, like, you feel good about the job he's done if that has improved a great deal. And I think it has.
But we don't know that.
At least from where it was. I mean, now, is it where it needs to be? No.
I think we can be very vague and general in that, you know, and say it's better than it was. Okay, well, but did we really even know where it was? Like, it was bad. We know it was really bad.
I do. I think I've had enough conversations behind the scenes that I know where it was, which was almost non-existent. Tommy, I have been told by people that would know, right? Like that, like enough that I, because I don't like to do that. I don't like to come out here and be like, well, you know, I was talking to Joe Schmo down at Dino's and he told me no. Like I've been told by people that actually would know that it was bad enough, but pre the current administration, like they couldn't even come up with a couple of $1,000 to throw at dudes to keep. Like it was bad. It basically just like it didn't exist. Right.
Well, if you remember, like that was a huge reason why Darren Boatwright ultimately lost his job, because it wasn't just that they weren't proactive in it. They were resistant to it. Like that administration was, I remember, adversarial about NIL. Like they did not want it to be a part of the game when that was where everything was moving. And it's not like they could have stopped it. So it was almost like get on board or get off the ship. And ultimately he had to get off the ship.
And I think there's a reason so many schools, I saw Trey Young is going to go be the GM for Oklahoma. Like there's a reason that's happening. And honestly, it's not a bad, I don't think it's a bad idea to get some help there, because these administrators already have enough to do, right? Like let's use Wichita State as things. Like you're trying to upgrade softball facilities. You're trying to evaluate and hire coaches. You're trying to make sure kids are in compliance. You're trying to make sure all the other programs are taken care of and successful as your newly launched bowling team is having a tremendous amount of success. But at the same time, you're expected to manage this other thing. Like I get why some places are bringing people in to help with that. And usually it's not like an NFL GM. It's basically somebody who can get people fired up to give the university their money. And so again, like when the problem for the Shockers is we need immediate growth, but it had gotten to the place, unfortunately, where there has been a long road. Now the success has to translate on the court and they can't continue to lose all their players. But if they are able to come in and put a collection of players together, and maybe that's the best way we can evaluate it, is say, well, who else was in on this guy? Like who else was in on Boyd, right? If they got somebody like Obi Oha, we know a lot of people are in on him. Like if they're winning players that are up, I think that is a great sign, big picture. And I'm very impatient with this, but I do think that's a great sign to know that they're able to be competitive for that kind of player. They're still not to the top level where I think they need to be and can be, but at least they are in the middle level, which is kind of where they're stuck right now.
Yeah, and I think that knowing what Obi Oha did for UNC Wilmington this last season, I mean, he was one of the key factors, at least, for that team making it to the NCAA tournament and, you know, being able to lead them offensively, great rebounder, great blocked shot player, like all of the different things that he brings. There's no surprise at all that he is garnering a ton of attention from high major programs, from other NCAA tournament teams that are Power Four teams that want him to basically fill that same kind of role for their program. So to your point, you know, if he's able to, if he ends up choosing Wichita State for whatever reason, maybe it's just as simple as I want to be closer to home. Who knows? But if he ends up choosing Wichita State over these other programs, yeah, I think that that's a feather in the cap that you end up then going to other guys and being like, look who we were able to get as our cornerstone signee of this transfer portal period.
There's two pieces. Can you get those players? That's the first part. Can those players be successful on the court? That's the second part. Two totally different things, right? We're not like winning basketball games is a discussion we had yesterday about Corey Washington. Now we're having a discussion about just being able to be at the table. Like I think you can totally separate those things to make your evaluations, as impossible as it is. And again, I do think this gets better in a few years, but right now this is what we deal with. So it's the playing field everybody is playing on. We're going to come right back. More Sports Daily. Tim Fitzgerald, he'll catch us up on K-State in the portal later this hour. Stick around.
Oh, okay, take it easy. We're going on the air.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody, to Sports Daily. Glad to be here with you. If you're on your way into work, want to keep listening to Sports Daily, even after you park the car, with the Odyssey app and Odyssey.com, you can. Just download the app. Visit Odyssey.com, search for KFH. Download the Odyssey app today to get started. Welcome back in. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster with you. Max Power producing for us. Rick chimes in on YouTube and says, is anyone monitoring academics? The majority of these kids aren't going to classes.
No, nobody, nobody's monitoring. I mean, I'm sure somebody is, but nobody cares.
Yes, they are. Like,
but, no, but nobody cares.
What information do you have that tells you none of these kids are going to class? Because I think that's totally bogus. Yes, they are. If they're not, that's a problem. But I don't think that it's true. It might have been at other times, but I don't think it's true right
but
now.
But do we care? Does anybody care? I don't care. I've never cared. I literally have never been like, as I'm watching a college basketball game, been like, man.
No, I don't care,
man,
when I'm watching a college basketball
game. Man, I really, really, really hope that Quincy Ballard is doing well in his geography class. Like, I don't care. Nobody cares.
I fundamentally care.
Sure. But holistically, I don't care.
Specifically care.
Right.
About X, Y, or Z, because there have been great athletes not going to class since the beginning of time.
Right.
Right. Like it's, you know, whatever, like nothing's changed in that regard. Like, yeah, I want kids to go to class. And I think that, you know, the current administration, Kevin Saul, I think they have gotten a lot of that in a really good place from what I've heard and can tell. And I think they deserve credit for that. That's the part of the job, though, that the public is like, yeah, whatever. Are you winning games? You know what I mean? Like, I think you have to, but we all have that, right? Like, we all have the parts of our jobs that are important that nobody really cares about, right? But they're still important. So it's still important that it's happening and that it's being monitored. It's just that the public doesn't really care. Like, we want to know if you're winning basketball games.
So yeah.
I thought that was a funny comment from Rick. We always appreciate Rick's comments.
Rick is
definitely old school.
He's the embodiment of old man shouting at clouds. Like, that's,
well, he's just old school. I think there are a lot of people that are frustrated with what we're dealing with. I mean, we have the Final Four coming up in 2 days. We have not talked in a week about the basketball of the Final Four because you're caught trying to keep up with the tornado that's happening through the transfer portal. Now, again, begs the point, why the hell do we open the portal officially before the games are played? That's nonsensical. Wait another week or 2 weeks, I guess it would be in this regard. Like, just wait a minute and then open it. Conversations are obviously going to happen with representatives. That's been happening for a long time, though. They've already been happening. And you know, again, like the solution here is to make penalties that can stick, and you can't really do that until you create contracts. But the tampering in the NFL is a big deal. It's legitimate. Like, the penalties are real. So fix it if you want to, but it is annoying that we've got basketball coming up and we don't do that. I was thinking about this with some of the players, like with Houston, you know, with Auburn, because Broome has been there now for a long time. Like, I don't like that we act like there's no loyalty or consistency in college basketball, because there absolutely is. I don't know as much about Florida's roster because they're kind of new to this, right? And Duke obviously has littered themselves with young stars. That's always been the way Duke's done it, though. And like, if you look at Houston specifically, and Auburn's best player, Johnny Broome, he's been there since like 2022.
Well, yeah. And how long, right? By the way, has Tyrese Proctor been at Duke? I mean, he's been there for a long time.
So like, I think that sometimes like we get lost in the chaos of it. Like, everybody has to hard reset all the time. Kansas just retained too much, by what the critics would tell you, right? Kansas State right now, we'll talk to Tim Fitzgerald in about 20 minutes. They haven't really done anything yet. I don't like the narrative that there's no retention happening the Shockers basically retained their entire team last year. You can get caught up in it. I think the Shockers might be a little more frustrated if they continue to lose their like star players. But there is plenty of loyalty and retention still happening in college sports. Avery Johnson has probably been, his door has probably been knocked on, I would guess, with insane offers and crazy things. He's staying at Kansas State. He just launched a drink that's apparently flying off the shelves, right? Like, it's not all bad. It's just some bad. And if you get caught up in it, as the Shockers, for example, are right now, it's overwhelming as a fan. It's impossible to keep up with as a fan. That's the problem. But I would tell you this, when Wichita State started heating up, guess what happened? They started to put a whole lot more butts in the seats, right? Like, we weren't at that point, you know, going into that Memphis game, it wasn't like you're sitting there as a fan, you're watching these games, and you're thinking, yeah, you know, they might have a chance to beat Memphis at home and get that big win, but gosh, they've had so much movement the last few years in the transfer portal. I'm just not going to.
Yeah, that's not realistic.
No, you had a big time program coming in that, based on what you'd been seeing, you were like, they got a shot to beat them. We got to get to that game. And they did. And it was so, like, it still all comes down to winning.
Well, right. And I think it oversimplifies it a little bit. But I mean, it's true that winning cures all ailments. Nobody's thinking about anything else when a team is winning. Right. There's no like, well, I wonder what their NIL budget is compared to everybody else. Or I wonder how many players are going to be in the portal this year. If you're winning games consistently, that doesn't matter. It doesn't matter as much because, you know, you can easily put on the blinders and just say this team is winning basketball games. And so that's ultimately I know it's oversimplifying it, but that is the benchmark. Like, that's like, it doesn't matter necessarily how you get there. There are 1,000 different ways to skin a cat.
Yep.
Doesn't matter how you get there, as long as you get there. And this probably isn't, I know this isn't ideal, but is anybody going to complain if Wichita State turns over their roster every single year, but they win every single year? Absolutely not. That's probably less realistic than the alternative.
But if it happens, right? That won't happen. If they get really good, they're not going to turn over their roster. A part of the reason they're turning over their roster is because they just finished eighth in the American, right? Again, use the FAU example. How many players, Tommy, did they lose the year after they went to the Final Four?
None, I believe.
At least of the key guys.
Yeah, none.
They all came back, right? So winning does cure everything. You will not lose all your players if you are winning, because the players want to be there. So again, get there. Look at the players that are in the Final Four that have been where they are for a long time. Are there hired hands, essentially, like LJ Cryer? Sure there are, right? But if you look up and down Houston's roster, there's a whole lot more guys that have put, and I'm
Jawan
not talking
Roberts
even just,
and Emmanuel yeah, Sharp and like these guys have been around. Yeah.
Yeah. Houston's been a program builder. They have been good because they've kept so many players for so many years and they're so consistent. So let's not look at the situation for more than what it is. And it is the situation. And when we talk about the Shockers, it has not been successful enough. When we talk about KU, it's hard to say. KU is the hardest one to evaluate, right? Because KU won a national championship in the transfer portal era. Remy Martin was a transfer portal guy, right? They won a national championship. The next year, they followed it up and went and got the best player out of the portal, put him with some pieces of the national championship team, and it didn't work. Okay. Or was that the next year? 2 years later.
You know who else? 2 years later. You know who else was a transfer portal piece? Kevin McCuller was a transfer portal guy for the Jayhawks.
Another key guy on
and became
team.
A key, like, foundational piece that, you know, especially that final year that he was with the Jayhawks, they had to have him on the floor. Like, when he was hurt and injured a season ago and didn't play down the stretch, that was when the Jayhawks fell off a cliff.
Who did they get any? I'm just looking. Did they get any portal guys? Grady Dixier. Let's just look real quick, because that was those were obviously really good players. All right. So they got Dickinson the year after Dick. Let's just look at this roster, because it's, sometimes it's hard. So Yesufu was a transfer portal guy. He was on that team. He was the big one. Was there another one on that team? Uday? No, they were. They had a bunch of young players. Yeah. So that Yesufu was the guy, and he was a big time. Remember, we remember him from what he did. So like, they KU goes and does this. One year they win a national championship, right? And then a couple years later they go put this roster together, and it's been kind of they've had, but it wasn't good enough. So now it's like, okay, now they start over, and we'll see. K-State, you can't say you hate the portal. They went to an Elite Eight by bringing in a portal guy, right? Keontae. So, like, it's not, like, there's no, like, there's no one way to anything. You just have to get it right. I think what will change a little bit is, like, Kansas isn't going to win 13 straight Big 12 championships again. Teams aren't doing that anymore, right? That won't happen. Kansas won't be, how many ever years they had a one or a two seed, whatever that was, like that yeah. won't happen again. Auburn's not going to be a one seed every year. Houston's not going to be, although they've probably been the most consistent, but Duke's not, like that stuff will roll over more frequently than it used to. But isn't that what we wanted? Like as a fan, like, do you want to see, like, that's the problem football has and has had for years and years and years. As you go into every football season, and it's like, man, there are three teams that could win a national championship this year, and that's probably it. And honestly, we don't vary from that very often, ever, in football. So in basketball, if we get this scenario where it really is a crapshoot coming into most, Kansas was a preseason number one, right? No, not even close. So I do want to appreciate for a minute the diversity we have created in college basketball to some degree. As frustrating as it is, and I don't love the portal. I don't. That's not what I'm saying. Just saying, like, we ask that it gets different and not the same teams don't win all the time and all these things, and then we get it and we're like, whoa, 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 what is this? Like, could you imagine in football if we had the kind of like wild, crazy nature in the CFP as we have in college basketball? That'd be insane.
And I may be in the minority, and that it's okay if I am, but I actually prefer the Final Four this year. I actually like the chalkiness of it, because these are the top four teams in the country, and I want to see them, you know, compete to win a national championship. I'm more, at least for me only, I'm more invested in these two games coming up on Saturday than I would have been the year of FAU and San Diego State. I mean, like that's just the way that I'm built, where it's like, I've been watching these teams all season long. I've not been watching San Diego State all season long. I've not been watching FAU. I have been watching Houston. I have been watching Duke. These teams can win a national championship. They're the best in the country. And I want to see them compete against each other for the right to go to a national championship. Like, I'm more invested and excited about that than I am in years when we've got 5, 6, 8, 10 seeds that are making it all the way to the Final Four.
So let's just a second look at that. So the ones that season, right? Kansas was a one that year that you're talking about, where you had the wild and crazy Final Four. I think obviously Kansas fans are disappointed in that, but that wasn't like a dominant, no doubt about it, Kansas team. I don't think Purdue was a one. Meh. I mean, they had Edie, but Edie doesn't translate. Big guys like that don't really. Houston was a one that year, and Alabama was that juggernaut offense one. But I think, like, if we look at that season, it was different than this season. Like, and we've talked about it a million times. Like, there has been a collection of great teams this year that was hard to sort through. And if you go back, and I'm with you in that I like it for this year, I wouldn't like it in all years if all the ones made it. But this year, these four teams particularly, and I brought this up, and one of the national guys used KenPom. They're four of the top 10
all time
KenPom teams. All time.
These are historically great and elite programs. Historically, that are playing.
Well, they're historically great individual teams.
Right.
Like, if you even take, like, the pro, like, just for what they've accomplished this year and what the numbers tell us about them, they're four of the top 10 ever that have, you know, by the numbers, that have played college basketball. We've sort of been on this collision course all year, right? Like, these have been, whichever way you wanted to stack them, and it took us longer to get there with Florida, but the numbers don't lie with how good Florida is. We were there all year with Houston and Auburn, right? And then Duke had a bunch of young players, so they sort of grew into themselves. But it became pretty apparent probably longer ago than any of us wanted to admit, because it's Duke, that this is a really, really good Duke team. So, like, it shouldn't surprise us that this is the year the ones all made it through. A bunch of these players are not going to be in college basketball next year. And I would bet a whole bunch of money that we don't get another year where four number ones make it into the Final Four. So I'm with you. Let's enjoy this one, because it is unique in how good these four teams happen to be. And we'll dig into the games more specifically tomorrow. But you have tight lines in both games, right? Like, neither game is a big line. Auburn's a slight dog. Houston's a slight dog. I think we are in for, like, if you're a basketball junkie, watching Duke and Houston match up is going to be fascinating. Has Duke played anybody that's going to bang on them like Houston is? A team full of linebackers that happen to play basketball? No. How does that work? Is Flag just so good that it doesn't matter? Maybe. There's a pretty good chance of that. But can they keep up with the way Houston's going to beat them up a little bit? I don't think they've faced anything like that yet this year.
Yeah.
And they just made it through a bracket, Tommy, where all the good teams in their bracket were all high octane offensive
totally.
Teams.
Totally. You know, and the thing about Duke and Flag specifically is just the overall stupid athleticism that Flag has. And, you know, just what he's able to do when he's got the basketball in his hands, creating shots and getting to the rim, and just in the efficiency in which he does that. I mean, it's of course elite, and that's, there's a reason why he's the best player in college basketball. There's a reason why he's an NBA guy, all of that. You've got now the nation's best defense, and their task is to try to stop him for 40 minutes of basketball. And it's going to be the biggest challenge that Houston has had this entire season. But if anybody can do it, it's the number one defense in the country. I mentioned this on Monday. Yeah, you've got Auburn and Florida. That's going to be a fun game. I'm excited about that one too. But that, for me, that's the appetizer. I mean, it's Duke and Houston.
And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
Welcome back in, everybody. Thanks for listening to us on KFH. If you're watching us on our video streams, not only did I jump Fitz's intro there, but you, like me, are distracted by the kissing sounds of Fitz making out with his dog. I was like, what is that sound? Then I look, I was like, oh, that's Fitz in his pup. Hey, Fitz, how are you?
Oh, good. She's demanding a lot of attention right now.
Yeah, women do. Hey, that's what they tend to do it. BubbleSugarGoPowerCat.com. That's Daphne, correct?
Yeah, that's Daphne.
Hey, Daphne. Fitz has us covered. Look, we said this yesterday to Tria Slaughter, KU Insider. Like, I'm so glad we have you guys, because following the portal is an impossible task.
I can't do it.
It is actually, though, but you have guys that can.
Yeah.
It has been easier for K-State than we thought, because they don't have anybody in, right? Have I missed anything? Has anybody jumped in yet?
No. It's bizarre. Because we expect a couple guys to go. We thought maybe they were waiting for the start of April due to NIL payment schedules. So we're a little baffled. Maybe they don't get paid on the first. Maybe it's later. I'm not sure what's going on. But K-State's got a lot of activity in the portal. You know, that kind of – is it a meaningful contact activity? Is Zooming with someone now considered enough to get them to commit to you? I don't know. There's that going on. Let's take it to another level. We're not even sure who the assistant coaches are right now. We think Jareem Dowling's with them, but we're not sure about anyone else. This is a strange phase of K-State basketball right now. And I think it'll only last, you know, a little while until we start getting some answers.
You know, I was thinking about it the other day as it relates to historically with Jerome Tang and how he's worked the portal before. I don't know, and maybe I'm like not thinking about other programs that, you know, could come to mind, but I don't know if there's another coach in America that has been as active late in the portal cycle as Jerome Tang has been. I mean, that kind of seems to be where he's lived anyway. So I would imagine that, you know, even though there hasn't been any movement right now so far in this cycle, you know, he's a coach that has kind of thrived towards the very end of the recruiting cycle.
And it's it hasn't always worked. He kind of struck out a little bit 2 years ago. Of course, he got Keontae Johnson, which I think caused this, to be real blunt. A belief that, hey, I found Keontae Johnson late in the portal. There's guys out there. Well, I think he was a little bit rarer than maybe thought. So they've got to be careful, because you get late in the schedule, you not only lessen the number of prospects available, but the competitive bidding war, so to speak, gets more hyper as coaches and NILs packet NIL givers start to panic that they've got these roster holes to fill. And I think that's what happened with how much they paid last year in the portal for Hawkins. Yeah.
What if though, like I makes me wonder, is there a possible good news scenario here in that maybe guys don't want to leave. Maybe everybody does want to come back. And now your portal shopping is really just kind of for like one or two spots. I mean, they're big ones. Coleman Hawkins and David Gasson were probably the two most meaningful contributors to this basketball team, but that looks a lot better, I think, than having to find six guys. So like, is there a positive potentially to the lack of movement yet?
Yeah, I think they're going to retain quite a number of guys. I think we're going to see maybe two, you know, by the end, maybe three. You know, the other effect of the portal is you go get guys and guys in your roster go, I don't like that. And then they hop in the portal. So you kind of can have dominoes going. And they've got some interest in some guards, which, you know, they're kind of guard heavy right now. So how will that impact the team? They really do need to find some big people. And it's just hard to know what is actually the point of the decision-making coming for the player. That's the great unknown in the portal. Are they going to make their mind up on the visit? Are they really going to take all their visits? Are they going to wait another week? You know, you just don't know when a kid's going to pull the trigger.
If you were ranking the importance of guys that could come back to Kansas State, who do you put at the top? Is it Doug McDaniel? Is it somebody else?
Yeah. From an X's and O's, probably. Yeah. Doug is a catalyst. He really grew into the job. I think he grew as a player and a person last year. I think that's kind of an unknown, untold story that maybe I need to revisit a little bit. He kind of was putting himself on the outside of the program with some of his actions, and he became, in some ways, the heart and soul of the program. So I think it's kind of a neat story. But, yeah, he's probably the most important piece, and that's kind of the issue. As you mentioned, the two pieces, that the most significant pieces that they lost were really important pieces to the team and how it was structured. So they've got to replace those guys.
How quickly and how much better do you think they can be next year? Let's say it starts with Doug McDaniel. They go and find a couple of players. We'll see what happens with the rest of these guys. But is it reasonable to set an expectation if they do have some of that kind of retention where it's sort of tournament or bust, like they better be back in the NCAA tournament? That seems fair to me when we see seven or eight teams out of the Big 12 go.
Yeah, I mean, I think you would – if you're Jerome Tang, you're hoping that their retention means growth as individual players and as a team. And then you can plug in some guys. And that's really where he kind of went astray. He didn't leave himself any structure in which to plug in the new players. He had to rebuild that structure every season. And this now will enable him to kind of have a framework of a team in which these players will fit. And I think that's a much better plan, but we'll see how it plays out.
I want to dial in, Fitz, to something you mentioned a couple of moments ago. I guess I've missed all the chatter about the assistant coaches. What's going on there? You said Dream Dowling might be with the program. Like, what's happening with the assistant coaches?
It's a confusing mess. We don't know. We believe Rodney Perry is leaving. I mean, there's strong evidence of that. Yurik Maligi's got interest coming from Texas, where he's previously been, but it's a different staff. It's just that the coaching portal's open right now. That's another layer here, and the fact that we haven't heard about this movement. I guess if you're Jerome Tang, you don't want any negative news out as you're trying to bring players in or possibly retain players. I'm sure they know, but maybe you just want to keep everything positive right now.
Yeah, it is tricky. That's not totally unusual, no. I guess, to see it. What do you think? We were just talking Houston Duke, Fitz. We're all fans of the Houston program and what Kelvin Sampson's been able to do. We talked about this tournament and people are like, oh, the 4-1 seeds made it in. But like, these are four of the top 10 KenPom teams that have ever played college basketball. So we're pretty fired up about it, but it's Duke Houston that gets everybody all hot and bothered because it is such a collision of styles, right? Like, this is like, what gives in this game? We've seen Florida Auburn, but this is, you couldn't have teams be more opposite of each other than this.
Yeah, this is going to be interesting, guys. These are two tremendous basketball teams, extremely well coached, great players. And as you said, there's a reason these four teams are in the Final Four. They're loaded. This has been a result of the transfer portal in some ways. You know, you add a piece here, add a piece there, and pretty soon you're pretty good. And whoever just lost those pieces that were added to your team isn't as good. So it's like everything's boiling out and all the talent is settling in at the power schools, which isn't great for the tournament, but it does make for some great basketball, and this Final Four will be that. I'm sticking with Houston. They're not perfect. They are beatable in some ways, but boy, are they very good. When they play at their highest level, nobody's going to beat them.
We would be remiss to not mention the K-State women, of course, falling in the Elite Eight over the weekend against USC, a Juju Watkins-less USC team. It was a fun game to watch. It was, back and forth and a ton of great energy. Ultimately, Jeff Mitty's squad falls a little bit short of making it, the next round for sure in the women's NCAA tournament. What's next for this program? Obviously they're losing a couple of key pieces, but what is next for this program?
Yeah, it will be interesting. They've got a lot of rebuild to do, not just key pieces, but, they had a lot of depth also in this senior class. They've had a couple players hit the portal already. So they're going to be very active in the portal. And the women's portal is evolving now to have a lot of great players in it, but also a little bit of a bidding war on their own context for players. And so NIL is playing a factor over there. I saw a stat, guys, that a full 25% of women's Division One basketball players are in the portal.
What about football? Anything?
On the football front? We got spring football, and it's here. We've had a press conference. It was interesting. I think we're all relieved to have it. Practice starts Friday, and a lot cooking on that front. We'll have it at Go Powercat, though, as we proceed through this shortened spring. Very interesting thoughts.
I have heard, water cooler wise, that Avery Johnson has had opportunity. People have wanted him, and he's turned them down. Like, things that you would just be stunned by. He's got a new drink that he's selling at grocery stores up there that's doing really well. But have you heard anything like that? Like, have other teams come calling for Avery?
Well, yeah, Coach Kleiman talked about it at his press conference that, most of his top players have been contacted, not directly by schools, but schools say, hey, we need a quarterback. And they put the word out to the agents who then, start the whole process. It's sickening. It's gross. This shouldn't be going on. But you give coaches an opportunity to prove their team. They don't care if it's ethical or not. They're going to take it. A lot of coaches. But yeah, these kids are getting inundated with offers. I think it says a lot about the K-State culture that we don't see more players bolting when these offers come rolling in.
How many more years, final thing, how many more years until the portal is settled down, you think? I'm putting it at three more.
Yeah, I think the portal's being fueled by NIL, and I hope rev share kind of settles some of that down. We'll see. It's been a gold rush for NIL money. I don't blame the kids to try to get theirs. So I think once that settles down, and hopefully the courts can help get it control this, and I hope Congress or someone can help control college sports, because it's on a course that's just absolutely implode at any moment. It's just out of control.
Yeah, it'll get there. We're going to get there. We're going to need help, though. Lawmakers, they're busy right now, I suppose.
Not really.
Yeah.
They just took a vacation.
Yeah. That's true. All right, Fitz, gopowercat.com. He mentioned a lot of this portal stuff covered there. The spring football news conferences digested there. You can find Fitz at Life of Fitz on X. You and Daphne, get a room, would you?
Yeah, she just went to lay down. Dude wants to go outside. It's not easy being a dog parent.
They're not. They're very bossy.
I know. And needy. Like me. Right. Well, thanks, boys.
That's true. Thanks, Fitz. We'll do it again soon. Tommy, I don't know about your dogs. Mine, we moved the morning up much earlier for the show now. And it's like the dog's bladder shrunk miraculously.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like now all of a sudden the urgency at which I'm bossed around to get outside just moved up 2 hours. They're timed to my alarm. Like the second my alarm goes off, it's like there's a dog in my face.
Yeah.
Like, all right, I got to get outside now. Now.
My dog, if she could sleep 24 hours a day, she would. Yep. So she doesn't get up. Like my alarm goes off and like I come back into the room and my wife and my dog are just passed out on the bed and probably still are, like right now, would be my guess.
That'll do it for a Thursday on Sports Daily. Regular programming here on KFH today. Rich Eisen follows us. Jim Rome from 2 to 5. JR Sports Brief and the Infinity Sports Network takes you the rest of the way. No Royals baseball today. It's those, you know, we get into baseball season, you catch a groove, you get a day off, and it's like, meh. I don't want a day off from baseball. We just got this thing started, but they'll take one today, I guess.
I really, really like the day baseball, though. I mean, the more the Royals can play during a weekday, I'm on board with that.
I did, too. They'll get a lot of that early in the year while the weather's still cold. So we'll get them back in action Friday. We'll give you a breakdown more basketball-wise, betting-wise on the Final Four as well. For Tommy, for Max, for Fitz, I'm Jacob. We'll see you tomorrow.